So today I'm going to talk about wisdom. What a great topic. It's rare in the world we live in. Wisdom is something that's often looked at in Buddhism as being one of the most important aspects besides practice. But the practice leads to wisdom. And the Buddha rediscovered this kind of wisdom, which allows us to understand the life we live, the ups and downs. And there are three parts to Buddhist wisdom. The first part is everything changes. Man, that's the worst part. Because you just get used to something and then it's different, including yourself. The second part is life is ultimately unsatisfactory. Now, I don't know if you've experienced that, but if you live long enough, you will. And third, we are not who we think we are. Not self. Now, back in the time of the Buddha, before they had self, they had soul. And the Buddha said, you are not the soul. You may not even have one. And people freak out. No, I have one. I like my soul. It stands apart. It doesn't change. It's my connection to the ultimate reality. How could I not have that? Well, what the Buddha found was, rather than being independent, we are codependent. We are interconnected and interdependent with everything all the time. There's nothing in us that stands apart. And now, because of psychology and psychiatry, we have self. Man, the self is so powerful. It directs our life for us. It tells us who we are and what to do next. It defends us. It defends its own reality. But it's not really real. It's just sort of like a process that happens. You know, and we have like form and sensation and perception and volition and consciousness, the five aggregates in Buddhism, and those things combine to give us the illusion of self-existence. Self-existence. And I like Marlon Brando. You know, he said, you know, I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody. And we all want to be somebody. But there's nobody to be. We are measured not by who we think we are. We are measured by what we do. That makes a difference in the world. You know, if people think, well, you know, it's the thought that counts. No, it doesn't. It's the activity. We need to do something. That makes a difference. Just having a thought, what is that? You know, it's just things happening in your brain. And they're not necessarily related to anything out there in any real way. But we like to think that's the case. There was a wonderful cartoon, two people meditating, a man and a woman. And then they had this sort of balloon above each character so you could see what they're thinking. And the man was thinking, who am I? Who am I? And the woman sitting next to him was thinking, I wonder who he is. I wonder who he is. There you go, you know. And as we progress through our life and mature and evolve, we keep becoming all these different people. It's really freaky. You look at your fifth grade class photo and you say, who the hell is that? What happened to him? And then we're high school and college, and then we get a career or we work and we do this and we do that and join organizations and go to church, and all those people are different, but they are aspects of who we think we are. They do make a difference to us. And hopefully, as we age and get more knowledgeable about all of that kind of stuff, we are less inclined to think that we count. We are less inclined to think that we need to make a difference. Our life is the difference. Our life, our interaction. I like that idea. It means I don't have to try so hard. I just need to wake up in the morning, have that first cup of coffee, and get ready to see what it's gonna be. What kind of day will today be? Will it be fact-filled or fantasy-filled? Will I have a lot to do or nothing to do? Will I have to create it, or will it create me? How much fun is that? And we never know what tomorrow is going to bring. We only have in our life one day. That's it. One day keeps changing into the next day. But it's not the next day. It's the same day, but it's different. That's all. And we project ourselves into the future and say, one of these days I'm going to... No, it doesn't work like that. It's today. If you want to do it 10 years from now, start today. They say, but we need to think about the future. When I go to the grocery store, there's so many things to think about and pick and choose. I need to make a list. Yes, of course. But when you're making that list, you're making it right now, today. And when you make it to the grocery store, you're in the grocery store right now, today, reading that list. That's what it's called. It's called preparing for the future in the present moment of today. So who is there? Well, nobody really. But you know what? That's less to defend. It's less to define. Who are you? I have no idea. Doesn't that bother you? No, it gives me freedom. It means I can be anything I want to be. I'm not restricted into who I think I am. But other people think you're that person. Well, that's their delusion, not mine. Then we come to life's unsatisfactoriness. Man, it always turns out to be a little less than it could be. I don't care. You know, when it's humid outside and it's a little hot and you're working on your hair and it's just not doing what you want it to do. And you go, you know what? Kusla said, life's unsatisfactory. I look in the mirror. What do I see? I see hair that won't do anything I want it to do. It's not good. I look in the mirror and I say, your hair looks great, Kusla. So we got the little stuff to worry about, and we got the big stuff to worry about, like our existence. Our existence creates a lot of unsatisfactoriness. Why? Because we are no longer connected. We have been disconnected. It was important and it was necessary to be disconnected from the world, okay? And why is that? Because we need to survive. Now, I take care of cats, and one of the cats just had some kittens, and they're just wonderful. They jump and they roll over and they have so much energy. But after a while, mom stopped feeding them. And they would come and try to nurse a little bit, and mom, no, eat the cat food. Kusala brings the cat food every day, eat his food. And I'm looking at that, and I see it's just sort of a way of letting go of the little guys, that she has to prepare them to be alone in this giant universe of ours. And our mothers sort of did the same thing. You know, though they spent more time with us than the cat spends with the kittens. Mine, 18 years. She nursed me along and encouraged me and told me what to do and, more importantly, what not to do, which I did anyway. And then about 18, she said, you know, it's time for you to go. Really, Mom? Yes, I'm sorry, but you need to have your own life. Wow, okay. So it took me a couple years to let go, and find an apartment and find a job and find a car. I mean, it didn't happen overnight, but then I was sort of like I'd go visit my family. And they were always happy to see me the first couple days. How are you? You're looking good. By the way, when's your plane ticket? You know, and I'm thinking, okay, yeah, yeah. So then you get that first job and the second job and the third job, and you just go, wow, will it ever end? No, it doesn't end. You just keep working and hoping and working and hoping, and then you say, you know, if only I had this, if only I had that, but you never get this or that. And you just feel a little, oh, it could be better. It's never perfect. Sometimes it's good enough. Good enough is great, because that means it's not really bad, it's not really good, and when it changes, you won't mind so much. It'll be okay. So this underlying discomfort of existence, the Buddha talked about a great deal. And then we come to the third, which is called impermanence, change. None of us want to let go. We hold on. It's too important to let go. But if we can't let go, the next thing doesn't happen. So we have to do it. Now, I live in downtown Los Angeles, Koreatown. Man, it is noisy and loud all the time. I don't care what time of day or night it is. There are sirens, sometimes 3 a day, sometimes 15 a day. The sirens happen at night, too. So I was reading Thich Nhat Hanh, and Thich Nhat Hanh said, in our monastery, oftentimes during the day, we'll ring the bell. And when the bell is rung, everybody stops doing what they do, stands there, and comes to their breath, going in and going out, going in and going out. Well, we have a bell at the center, rarely rung, and I thought to myself, this sounds like a great practice. What can I use to continually bring myself into the present moment? And then it dawned on me, the sirens. I'll use the sirens. Every time I hear a siren, I'll go to my breath. Breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out. And 20 minutes later, 50 minutes later, 2 hours later, the next siren, another chance to practice, breathing in, breathing out. Before, I used to be angry at the sirens. Now they become part of my practice, that I am able to find a way to get in the present moment experience of my breath throughout the day using the sirens as my practice. How cool is that? That I turned anger into gratitude. Ooh, kusala. And then I thought to myself, you know, we can also use the sirens as emergency impermanence. Yeah, something happened unexpectedly. We need first responders. It's changed. There's a fire. There was no fire there yesterday. There's a fire there today. We need the first responders. It changed. Earthquake, it changed. Hurricane, it changed. Those first responders are out there all the time dealing with the impermanence of living on this planet that's just revolving around the sun, minding its own business. And then it drives us crazy because we expect things to stay the same. We don't want it to change. It's a beautiful day today. It may not be tomorrow. Will that be okay with you? Can you let go of the beautiful day? Yeah, I suppose. Southern California, we have a lot of beautiful days. Nome, Alaska, maybe not so much. But yeah, I can let it go. Okay, what else can you let go of? Well, how about that person's name that you've never been able to remember? Is it okay to let go of feeling guilty about that? And just say to yourself, I don't care anymore. I'll just say hi, and that'll be good enough. They will think I know who they are. So letting go becomes an important practice for all of us, because as we start to age, we let go of physical comfort and put up with physical discomfort. We let go of 20/20 vision, of hearing really good. We let go of a lot of things. Some of us have to let go of chocolate because our system doesn't want to accept it anymore. How bad is that? Can you let go of chocolate? I don't know. It's always on sale at Vons, chocolate. I don't know. And then as we get older and older, have you noticed how many people are dying lately? Man. And the weird part is they're all from the baby boomer generation. All these stars and celebrities and musicians, people that you never thought would die. And they're dying. Can you let go of them? And then you've got parents and you've got pets who die all the time. 10 years, 12 years, you feel lucky to have them for 12 years. They're your best friend. They never criticize you. They never say thank you, but they never criticize you. And then little Billy goes and you go, oh, the Rainbow Bridge. What a wonderful thought that is. But no, he's just dead. And you just go, oh, man. And then it's our turn. Now, I don't know if you thought about your turn, but that's part of the impermanence of being on this planet, that nothing lives forever. It can't. Can you imagine the chaos if nothing died? And we just kept getting birth and birth and growth and growth, and all of a sudden, not 8 billion people, we'd have trillions of people. Nothing to eat, no good water to drink, you know. So we have to make room for the next folks who are getting ready to come here. And it's our turn to let go. And I like to think of my meditation practice is the practice of letting go. So when I sit down and come to the sensation of breath, I start to count 1, 2, 3, 4. And once my mind is finally fixed on the sensation of breath, I let go of the counting and simply rest with a sensation. And the thoughts don't come very often. Sometimes little thoughts in the background are happening. But most of the time it's just a sensation of breath. Sensation of breath. And what am I doing? Literally, what I'm doing is I'm letting go of everything for 20 minutes. I'm practicing. Okay, how does it feel to let go of everything for 20 minutes? But the cell phone just rang. No, let go of the cell phone. The football game's on. You know, football, 20 minutes, you can do it. My knee really hurts. No, don't worry. You'll walk again. Come on. 20 minutes, let go. And what happens? There's a certain sense of freedom in letting go. You don't have to be in control any longer. And it doesn't control you any longer. And you rest in the peace of the present moment. And then when it's time for us to say goodbye, we can rest in the peace of the present moment because we've been practicing letting go of everything forever. And then the next great adventure starts. If you're a Buddhist, we're talking rebirth, man. Maybe France. That sounds good. I'd like that. And if you're not a Buddhist, you probably got heaven. And that's cool, though that's forever. That's a really long time. And there's other options after we let go of this lifetime. This is not the end. This death gives us a new beginning. Yeah, cool. Okay, I like that thought. But then there you are, UCLA Medical Center, surrounded by family and friends. Don't go. Don't go. Can I have your golf clubs? You know, so we need quiet. Turn off the TV. Friends and relatives, other room, please. I've got some important business to do right now. I gotta let go, man. I gotta let go. And there you go. So these three aspects of Buddhist wisdom, impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and not self, allow us to look at the world in a much different way and gain some new insights into what it means to be alive and human, in control and not in control. I thank you all for showing up today. It's really a pleasure for me to be able to come here out of LA and say thank you.